It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, Alex, and Lori are all here. But you know what? I'm glad we have a good panel because there's lots to talk about, including, did Apple drop its plans for encrypting iCloud after the FBI complained? We're missing the point when we're saying we're banning face recognition. And Apple's opportunity with health data and more, there is a lot to talk about. It's coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Mac Break Weekly comes to you from the Twit LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 697, recorded Tuesday, January 21st, 2020. Stop sniffing my AirPods. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Hover. Use a domain name that truly represents you and your passion. Visit hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. Alex Lindsay is in studio with me from the Pixel Core. Hello, Alex.
Hello.
Good to see you once again. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Mr. Ritchie, bonsoir.
Bonsoir, Leo. Oh, it is great to see you again.
You have behind you the Santa Monica Pier, I believe.
That is the Apple. Apple is responsible for that. I have no control over what they choose to put on my displays.
I love
that. That's going to be a controversy on the internet in 3 seconds now that I said that.
Yeah. Actually, is it Vegas? I'm trying to figure out what it is. I love those screensavers. They add more all the time, right? Do you like the underwater
Santa
ones?
Monica Pier.
Yeah, it is. Okay. And you like that's part of the game I play. What am I looking at? It's kind of fun.
At least you can find out now. And I think like 90% of them end up being Dubai.
Yeah.
When you finally find
a lot of Dubai shots. It's a beautiful city. Lori Gill also here, managing editor at iMore.com. Hello, Lori.
Hello. What? I don't have a beautiful image of Santa Monica in my background, but I do have a new background.
You got wood.
I took a page from Andy's book, and I'm trying to make my background a little more interesting. But as you can see, it's not perfect. Or this side, it's not perfect. I'm still showing too much.
Yeah, there's a towel or something that's shining very bright. But it's all right. J.J. Abrams would approve. It's a little specular highlight towel in the back there. Also, here, that's Andy Iannocco. He is always a pleasure from WGBH in Boston, the man of the sideburns. I learned something sad the other day. I don't know if you knew this. Isaac Asimov died from a blood transfusion and got HIV in 1984, and that's how he died. It was covered up at the time.
Yeah.
His family and doctors didn't want to say anything, and it wasn't until all the doctors involved had passed away that information was revealed.
Yeah, actually, his family was advised to keep it quiet because at that time, it's hard for people who weren't alive during that. Yeah, exactly. It was nothing was understood about HIV, and also it was coupled to really horrible, horrible bigotry and homophobia. And so, basically, if anybody had the disease, they would definitely not want to tell anybody about it because it would be ostracization at best. And violence at worst.
Isn't that sad? And of course, it was after several years after that efforts were made to make sure that the blood supply was not contaminated and you couldn't get sick from the blood supply. But I only mention that because your sideburns always remind me of Isaac Asimov's.
Yeah. I mean, I've also been changing. This is the winter
between Wolverine and Asimov.
I trim them just basically to cut down on the echo, but winter it's like it's dark at 4. I can't get motivated to start any new project, even something as more complicated than brushing my teeth and basic shaving. And it's like, well, what the hell? It's dark outside anyway. The day's over. I may as well just shut down the computer.
Now, Renee, you tweeted this top story a little bit because you remember when this happened. Reuters this morning reported that Apple had planned to encrypt iCloud backups in a way that even the FBI couldn't get them, couldn't see them, Apple couldn't see them. But they dropped those plans after, according to Reuters, after the FBI said the move would harm investigations. Reuters said they have six sources on this. This was about 2 years ago. So just as background, you should know iCloud is not is encrypted so that nobody but you and Apple can yes. see what's on your iCloud backup. And Apple very famously has offered to provide those that backup. In fact, they did in the Pensacola Naval Air Station shooting. They provided that information from the iCloud backup on the shooter's phones to the FBI almost immediately. It's a double-edged sword, though, because anytime there is a key, and this underscores also the problem we have with AG Barr and others asking Apple to back off on encryption on the phone. Anytime that key is available, there's always a risk. And all you have to do is ask Scarlett Johansson how she feels about the fact that iCloud is not trust no one encrypted.
Well, so those are there's several different things that work there. The Scarlett Johansson was part of, and they're actually all fit together, which is weird. But what happened to Scarlett Johansson and other celebrities is that iCloud was encrypted, but they had means for you to get into your account. One of them was your password.
Apple had,
and a lot
the
of
key.
People reused.
But Apple
well, no,
also
but before,
had the key.
But before Apple had the key, if people used the repeated password and that password was compromised, or if they were public figures and their security questions were publicly available, people could break into their account or social engineer their way into the account. That led Apple to deliver two-step encryption, and two-step encryption was different because you had to print out a recovery key. But what then happened is people turned it on, and they promptly lost their recovery key, and they were shut out of their iCloud backup, which is their kids' photos, their wedding photos, all those things. And it became a huge issue for Apple because for most people, it's not a hacker or someone stealing their data or even a subpoena. That's the biggest worry. It's them losing access to their data. So Apple deprecated the old two-step authentication and created a new two-factor authentication. And with the new two-factor authentication, Apple held a key so that if you could prove ownership, they could unlock it for you and restore your access to iCloud, because that was the biggest support issue they were facing, not the legal requests and not the hacking requests. And that was 4 or 5 years ago, and we documented it a lot, had a lot of discussions at the time. Since then, that has not changed. Absolutely nothing has changed since iCloud went, which is where the story is a little wrong, because it's not that Apple had plans to go to encryption. They were fail secure, and they switched to fail safe. And Tim Cook mentioned in passing when pressed in a German interview, will you do fail secure? And he said, it's something we're always looking at. And my understanding is they have these debates inside Apple constantly. What about people locking out? What about the government asking for stuff? What about all this? But it creates a level of complexity. It's the same one when they say, why can't you have Touch ID or Face ID and your passcode? It's, well, then if you burn your finger or something else happens, you need a recovery password, and they're right back to people losing their recovery password. So I believe it's something that's an apt discussion, but they haven't implemented that as an option yet.
Hold on a sec.
Yes.
Regardless of the two-factor, two-step, yes. Apple has the key to iCloud. Apple, if asked by law enforcement, can say, here is unencrypted iCloud data. We know that. They just did
They
it.
Do with the current system, yes. And also,
were
most,
they considering a system where they would not have the key? That's what I got this Reuters story from.
They had a system where they didn't have a key. You had a recovery key.
So
they
you're
switched
saying the
to
fail,
a system where they have the key.
You're saying that the fail, what is it, fail secure system?
Fail secure versus fail safe.
Involved them yeah. not having a key.
Yeah, you had to have that physical recovery key. Now,
so how long was that? There was a theoretical period of time.
2015, I believe.
So at that time, if law enforcement goes to Apple, there is no way they can unencrypt.
Yeah, I mean, some people, if you're super technical, you could say that Apple could maybe do a person-in-the-middle attack on their own servers, which is what we said about
right.
iCloud
right.
messages. Because unless people manage their own certificates and do end-user-side encryption like PGP or like some – because almost every storage service, online backup service, the vendor also has a key.
Yes,
but
Dropbox
they,
does it, OneDrive does it, Google
yeah,
Drive does
Amazon.
It. Amazon does it. And there's a good reason for that besides – what do you call it? So fail secure
fail safe.
And fail
yeah.
safe. Besides fail safe, the other reason is there's lots of things they can do. If you want to view your data on a web page,
yes.
If you want to dedupe, if Amazon wants to dedupe data, all of that, the data has to be, they have to be able to unencrypt the data without your say so, without your, So almost all cloud services work that way. In fact, Steve Gibson looked at all of them. The only one he could find that was, in his mind, trust no one. was sync.com, where it's encrypted to the point where they can't decrypt it. Only you can. And it's like LastPass. It's only on device. What you want is only on device decryption, right? So there's no man in the middle possible. It's not being decrypted, then streamed to you.
Yes.
It is decrypted on your device. LastPass does that, but no cloud service, including iCloud.
Yes.
Does that and sync.
And Apple's thing is that if you really want that, like they believe that this is the best solution for 90%+ of people, 90%+ of the time. But if for some reason you don't want that, you can turn off iCloud backup and do an iTunes or now a Finder backup, and there's an encrypted button there, and then nobody can get to it.
Or pre-encrypt. This wouldn't work with the iCloud phone backup because there's no way to do it. But on your desktop, you can have an iCloud folder or a OneDrive folder or a Dropbox folder.
Yes.
And just make sure nothing's in that folder unless you encrypt it with VeraCrypt or PGP before it gets put in that folder. Then you're backing up a
blob. Some services let you do that.
There's definitely like two camps. There's two worlds to live in. There's one world where we can be totally encrypted, but we can also lose everything. And if you think that your children's photos getting lost forever are worth the security that you have, then you do want to be feel secure, and you want to do something like only backup on iTunes and only to a hard drive on your computer at home that's encrypted, you know, using encrypted backups. But if things like the music that you listen to and your kids' photos, they're more important to you than whatever data you store on your phone, then you do want to be feel safe. And Apple, I think in this case with our phones, believes that an iCloud backup should be feel safe, not feel secure. Because if my mom loses all of her photos of her kids, she's going to be horrified. She's not going to care if someone steals her phone because she knows that there's nothing on there for her that needs to be protected at that level. She can just erase her phone, be done with it. Everything's good. So there's definitely the two camps. And Renee, back in 2007, did talk about how, you know, why not let those of us who feel experienced enough and feel reliable enough to keep our own key, let us keep our own key. And then everybody else, you know, Apple can keep that key.
It's also an education problem, because your mom probably didn't see this story from last or 2 years ago about the 16-year-old who hacked into Apple's servers and stole 90 gigabytes of secure files. He was able to do that because Apple was fail safe, not fail secure. And maybe your mom would be, if she knew about this, because I bet you anything, she thinks your data is safe and encrypted on
Although
Apple's
that
wasn't
iCloud, that was an admin machine that he hacked into.
Yeah.
Well, but would he have had access to that if Apple had...
Apparently not iCloud. iCloud is pretty well protected.
Okay.
Yeah. It's always this tension between customers who want a service that always not only always works, but always works the way that they expect it to, even if they're expecting it to do something that is prohibited by the laws of gravity, physics, and probability, and having to actually make good decisions on the user's behalf. The networking box that I have, my NAS behind me, is in many ways a pain in the butt to use because it'll get thrown offline or it'll stop, like its security certificate will go bad and needs to be renewed. And I'd much rather have this thing that just always, always works. But the reason why it fails is because it's not taking any shortcuts to make me happy. It's assuming that I know how to run a secure box that's available across the internet. Whereas when you have something like a Ring doorbell or any other sort of IoT sort of device, the consumer wants to plug it in, give it a Wi-Fi password, and it just simply works everywhere. And the only way to make that work is to have default passwords that are shared by every single device that this manufacturer makes, and shared secrets that are shared known passwords and logins to central entities. And that's the sort of stuff that gets immediately exploited by the bad people. So there's a lot of tension between those movements. And Apple, there would be a wonderful series of like oral history books inside Apple about saying, here's how many people are complaining because customer service is sick of getting emails that begin with, but this was like the last Christmas video we had of mom and dad before the accident and we lost them forever. And now you're telling me that I backed them up to iCloud and now I can't get them back. And how do you cut down on that while also trying to assure people that bad people can't get access to your data, and they also can't be they won't be victimized by, let's say, a future pivot of law enforcement to insist that that the government has 100% access to all of your cloud data at all times.
And I think that a lot of times we always say Apple focuses on what 90% of the people want to do 90% of the time. This is what 99% of the people want 99% of the time.
But I only again submit that's but, because they don't understand also means their data is vulnerable.
But I think that I know my parents and many other folks would consider their data vulnerable if they know that there's chances that there's no way for them to get back into it. And I think that if you're doing something that you're concerned about, you know, in that sense, you know, then you should educate yourself on how to employ Tradecraft and do what you need to do to keep it secure.
Here's why I think that education is an issue. Nobody cared about privacy 10 years ago.
Right.
All of a sudden, we're learning more about what that means. And so suddenly, I would say a vast majority of Americans who in the past weren't worried about it are suddenly worried about it. Right. So I think maybe it's a question partly of security versus convenience, but also partly of ignorance and not knowing fully. Just, you know, because Apple says encrypted, encrypted, encrypted. I think that they're giving people the impression that it is very...
Well, our culture is saying that, too. Like, we've become incredibly InfoSec sensitive to the point where... the whole reason I started looking into this is that Lori told me, you were going to write an article about encrypted backups. And I went to, you know, friend of the show, Dave Nanian, and said, how do I encrypt SuperDuper? And he said, I will tell you, but please don't ever do it, and please don't ever tell anybody to do it, because the minute you do that, we can no longer recover anything. And I have had so many people tell me they lost their photos to fire, to flood, they forgot the password, all these things that... And there is this tension between InfoSec people who say encrypt everything and backup people who say, no, please only encrypt stuff that really needs to be encrypted. It shouldn't be a default state for you. That I've tried to find a middle ground, and I think there is. And I think the education that's lacking is that encryption, by definition, isn't always good, and neither is the lack of encryption. But you have to identify the stuff that would mean if this being stolen or subpoenaed is worse than it being lost, please encrypt it. If it being lost or destroyed is worse than it being subpoenaed or stolen, please do not encrypt it. And we have to educate people about both those choices.
You also have to acknowledge that Apple is sensitive to law enforcement.
Yeah,
I mean, one of the reasons Apple would like to make this so that they can't decrypt it is not U.S. law enforcement. They're not worried about the FBI. They're worried about Chinese, Russian, Australian, and
data repatriation.
Yeah. So I think Apple would love to be able to say, sorry, we can't hand that over. But they don't, and they can't. And they also are sensitive to the criticism from the FBI. That's a lot of negative headlines the FBI is putting out.
Well, it's also
about them not helping in the investigation against terrorism.
Refusing to help.
Yeah, that's bad PR.
That's bogus language. Yeah.
Well, and I think that also
And by the way, when the president tweets it too, that hurts.
Noted
InfoSec expert.
Noted idiot. And
yeah, I understand.
InfoSec expert.
But remember,
you forget, Rennie. He has Giuliani on his side. He's a noted. He owns a cybersecurity company.
We're talking about public perception, and that's also important.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I think that also that when you talk about legislation, which comes from public perception, drawing that line too far out means that it puts them at risk of going, people saying, well, that's not reasonable. People have to be getting into it.
I don't envy them. They're in a tough position.
Right. So they've drawn the line with everyone around the world, including China, including everyone else, that the phone is the line. Right. That's the line
they've
drawn.
Do encrypt that, right? You can't take my phone and get into it.
Unless you,
they believe the chance of it being lost is higher than a server-side backup.
By the way, I should mention the 9to5 Mac report that the police were able to unlock the Pensacola shooter's phone using Gray Key. They're celebrating Gray Key, both of which have exploits that apparently work with an iPhone 11.
But these weren't even iPhone 11s. They were 5 and 7s, I believe. So they have unlocked
iPhone 11s.
Separate, exactly. Yeah. Separate stories.
So,
they have Checkmate, right? That goes back to almost all previous iPhones.
Except not the 11. Checkmate doesn't.
Yeah.
They can use Checkmate against the Pensacola shooter's phone. Mm-hmm. And Gray Key, and this is frustrating, but Gray Key and Cellebrite, as part of their business, discover and keep secret exploits that allow FBI and other
authorities. And so do nation states.
How does Apple
other nation states like the Saudis to decrypt phones?
I have to admit, I just wonder why Apple doesn't spend like $5 billion and just buy those companies and Call it a day. So just buy, the whole company. Just buy both Grakey and Celebrite and go.
That's an endless process. Well,
but yeah, it's still like they need like why not? Here's your benefit.
They're sensitive to bidding wars. You guys too, don't want to make exploits even more valuable.
But they have, by the way, Apple's paying more and more and more for exploits than ever before.
Right.
Probably because of this, right?
Yes.
I think the last bug bounty was up to $1.5 million. So
even if Apple had to buy one company a year for $2 billion, it wouldn't matter.
it would
be the cost of being secure.
They could afford it.
But then they would divest and make a new company. They get bought every 2 years.
Yeah, monopoly of cracking phones.
Yeah.
Well, if Apple owned the
company that cracked phones, it would probably be a problem for the FBI and the government. There'd be a lot of problems with that.
Yeah. Anybody who knew that you could form, if you know of a good exploit, or if you are a former employee of a company that's now owned by Apple that knew of an exploit, if you can just simply file a corporation with Delaware and then 3 months later get a check for $500 million, this would be quite a nice.
It'd still be less expensive for Apple. There's not that many of them.
But this
you're going to run out of checks at some point.
Why it's a big deal that they want back doors or keys in escrow, because you can't keep a lid on this stuff. Exploits or escrow, you can't keep a lid on this stuff. And so what governments, I mean, look, this is going to be a given, and it'll happen in the United States. Governments will say, I don't care how you do it, you have to provide me with unencrypted clear text whenever I ask for it, and you figure out
Australia
how to do
it. Australia is trying that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Russia's already done it. I don't know what the state in China is, but I would guess that every Chinese company can do it.
But I believe that Apple is talking about walking out of Russia.
I'll believe it when I see it.
But they're talking about the phone is not
ever going to walk out of China.
Russia's not as valuable a market.
Yeah, Russia's a big deal. Yeah.
Also, they have you have bigger problems in Russia in terms of human rights abuses than you have in China, conceivably, because you have one person that needs to be gotten rid of. Whereas with China, it's something
it's a whole
that,
minority of Muslims.
Yeah,
exactly.
If you're in the northwest of China, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. You don't want to be a Uyghur and have an iPhone. But I don't know where you go. And this is the problem: is that you could say, well, as you just did, people need to get better at InfoSec.
I'm just saying that I don't think that
you can't expect Apple to do it for you. I think you're exactly right.
You know, that's all.
They're not going to because of governmental pressure, among other things.
Right. I think they found a line that they're willing to defend, and it's a defendable position, and they're going to stick with that.
When the FBI says you didn't unlock the phone, they can always say, but we gave you the iCloud backups.
Right.
We cooperated. We gave you all the data we could.
And right now, this isn't unlocking the phone from Apple's perspective. It is literally building something new. Like, I think that's really an important distinction.
That's what they wanted
understand.
In San Bernardino. They wanted a new OS that they could push on the phones that would allow them to try many, 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 many keys.
All these access requests from the government now is not, we want you to take something you already have and unlock it. They're saying, we would like you to create something new that burrows into into your own system. So it's like you have a very secure castle wall. We would like you to knock a hole here and then put a hole here that goes right to the center, and then we want you to give us the key, and we're going to assume that nobody can open that door.
What they really want is the precedent. They want the precedent on the books that says that if government demands data that you might have conceivably have had access to, you have to give us the technology to fork it over. And this starts with unusual cases like active shooter, like these shooting cases. In 5 or 10 years, though, that precedent will basically expand to say that if you have a server that offers cloud services, there has to be you have to have a government representative on site that has access to a keyboard and a screen that can access anything that's on that device or on that server.
And again, we're talking about the fact that they already have all this person's metadata. So they already know every person that person called with that phone, everybody they texted, everybody. They have that information before they get into it. And they got into it. When we talk about risks here, if we decided that it was the number of people dying to terrorists, which is horrible, but not a high number, if we compare that to your pool, your car, we would say no one should drive and no one should have a pool, because those actually kill far more people.
I was wondering where you're going with a swimming pool. Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
compare that to my pool.
Yeah, you can't have a pool. Yeah. I mean, like, you would literally make Americans more safe by statistically by taking away their pools than giving
them. I already
them
did that with
phone.
My damn hot tub. I can't get it more than 104 degrees anymore.
Oh, gosh.
What?
You just have to go
state. You can't sous vide that whole side of beef anymore.
Nanny state.
You know, you can work. You can. That can be sorted.
Yeah. No, I've been trying to get my hot tub hacked for years.
It's based on the thermometer.
Yeah, but it's a digital thermometer. That's what I thought. Is there must be a way to change this?
You just remember that the heater
come over
is
to the house, will you?
The heater is it's just being told when to turn on and off.
Right.
You can put another thermometer.
I could trip
there.
The heater.
Yeah.
I just wish that Apple's been able to like buy huge billboards saying that hey, we are the company that was on your iPhone.
On your iPhone stays on your iPhone. Yeah.
Yeah, but what I wish they would do is increase the table stakes of knowledge for anybody who's using a phone these days. Like if you own a car, you don't have to know how fuel injection systems work. You don't have to know like what the O2 sensor does. You do have to know that, see this hole right here? You need to check the oil and you need to replace, you need to keep adding oil and do oil changes. And if you live in the Northeast, you need to like get the underbody sprayed or else it'll rust out. They're like you only have to know like three or four things to keep a car running for 150,000 miles. Those are the table stakes. And I think that we need to understand what the table stakes are for basic literacy of owning a phone or owning a computer. If people understood how encryption worked, what the trade-off and what the balance point is between, we want to make sure you always can get access to your phones, to your photos and your videos and your information if your phone gets lost or stolen. We also want to make sure that if your phone is lost or stolen, those photos and videos don't wind up in other people's hands. And if there were a better education campaign, people would have a better appreciation and a more realistic understanding of, A, here's what can and cannot be done if you are careless and you lose your phone, but also here is why, when the government says that Apple is refusing and trying to create refusing to help an investigation and trying to create the false impression that Apple has this big manila folder in an old-fashioned, old-timey steel filing cabinet of all this terrorist data that they just simply refuse to hand over. They will know that, we understand that that's not how encryption works. So the table stakes of information and understanding has to be increased, and Apple is in a good position to do that, I think.
It's a really interesting conundrum.
Yeah.
I think Apple's...
The conversation is good.
Yeah, it is. It's important, and I think education is important, and I think Apple's default is, look, if you want it encrypted, that's on you.
Right.
If you want trust no one encryption because there are negative side effects, that's on you. And, you know, it'd be nice if they didn't pretend that everything was secure and safe. That's an advertising slogan.
Don't worry about it. Don't think about it. We're doing the thinking for you. Well,
it'd be better if everybody knew. And then it's our job, by the way, to educate people on how to keep yourself safe and private. We're going to do more of that. I think that that's an important responsibility of tech journalism these days is to explain what is going on, what is safe and private, what isn't, and how you can make it safe and private. For instance, stop using email, start using Signal, things like that. Very simple. But if you want secure communications, it's not iMessages, it's not email, it's Signal. By the way, I want to ask Renee real quickly on this Reuters article. I presume you read the whole thing. They did make some other assertions. I just want to check with you because you're going to be the fact checker on Reuters. Had it proceeded with its plan, and we wouldn't disagree with this, Apple would not have been able to turn over any readable data. You only disagree with the motive, not the fact.
No, well, the way that they're phrasing it, like, so my read of this is that they had one person who was not very looped in at Apple, and then a bunch of people on the FBI side, we have no way of understanding how sophisticated.
Those six sources may have been all within the FBI.
I believe they were. But only one of them was former Apple, and that person was self-admittedly not in the loop on this. My understanding from people who are in the loop on this is that it has been a constant topic of discussion inside Apple. And at first, you know, they were hardcore on this has got to be secure and fail secure and all of that. And they realized that they were a bunch of scientists in a room and their parents were screaming at them.
Yeah.
And so they made the current system. But now they're still like, no, we've got and then Tim Cook mentioned it. They're having this huge debate about how to do it and how to set it up, because the online is just it's less error prone. Like I shouldn't say that. You're more likely to have a recent backup if it's online, because not everybody is going to sync continuously to iTunes or the Finder. So it does have definite benefits, but it's just architecting a system that doesn't compromise either end and making it available to billions, potentially billions of people. So to me, my understanding is that's the hang up. It's just they haven't.
Well, here's what
it's on the list, but it hasn't been shipped yet.
Clarify that. Instead of protecting all of iCloud with end-to-end encryption, Reuters writes, Apple has shifted to focus on protecting some of the most sensitive user information.
Yes.
Such as saved passwords and health data. Is that because they put it in the secure enclave, or
it stays on device? It's not in the there's secure iCloud, which is where all the stuff is stored. And there's different iCloud.
So they don't have access to secure iCloud.
They don't keep a key for a bunch of different things that they consider the things that they consider are better for you to lose than them to have access to, which includes your health data and your passwords.
Perfect.
And things like that.
Okay. But Reuters goes on to say backed up contact information, texts from iMessage, WhatsApp, if you back up WhatsApp to iCloud, you don't have to, and other encrypted services remain available to Apple employees and authorities. Yes.
And iMessage is a little complicated because when they shipped iMessage Sync, it was a little bit messy. And so currently, if you turn on iMessage Sync, which is called Messages in the Cloud,
you have to turn that on. Yeah,
you don't have. Yeah, well, I'm not sure because I haven't started off a new phone.
Well,
yeah,
but this is what we always have said: if you can turn Messages in the Cloud on and all of your messages now go to the new phone unencrypted, then clearly Apple decrypted them in the back end.
Well, no, so there's a difference. When you turn on Messages in the Cloud, the key is on your device, not on Apple servers. If you turn it off, it defaults back to being on iCloud backup, and then it is on Apple servers.
Oh, that's very confusing. So if you want to keep it secure, turn on Messages in the Cloud. But then when it's but no, that doesn't make sense, Renee, because I have it messages on my old iPhone XS. I turn on Messages in the Cloud, I get my new iPhone 11 without doing anything else, those messages propagate to my iPhone 11 unencrypted.
So the only difference is Apple doesn't. So it works like the health data because it'll sync back your health data. It's just it's stored in an encrypted iCloud, secure iCloud enclosure that Apple does not keep the key for.
So if you turn on Messages,
if you lose all your devices, they cannot help you.
Okay, so what's happening is the key going from my iPhone XS into the cloud, decrypting, and then coming the unencrypted message down into my phone.
That's my understanding, yes. Because if you lose all those devices, if those devices all somehow get wiped, you are starting fresh.
No wonder they don't tell people about this. It's freaking confusing.
It is. And I think they'll normalize it eventually. But like, they still haven't rolled out iMessage Sync for the Apple Watch yet. So it was very much and it was one of those things that was delayed several months after it was announced. So it's my guess that they're still working feverishly to make it. They made it work. Now they have to make it work well.
So let me. I'm sorry. I'm an idiot. Let me clarify.
No.
I want to see if I understand this. There is general iCloud that Apple has access to, authorities have access to. There is a secure iCloud that only you have access to. Apple can't share with the authorities. In that are your keychain passwords, right? That's where keychain goes. In that is your health data. Because I have tied everything into Apple Health, so it knows my blood pressure, my blood type, my medications. But that's secure, and the authorities can't get my blood type from that, right?
So the better way to think about it is only iCloud backup is not secure. iCloud backup is the only thing Apple can get into.
Oh, interesting.
Everything else is secure. Yeah.
But the problem is it's not clear when you're using iCloud backup. For instance, it sounds like Messages in the Cloud is iCloud backup. It's not.
Yes, it's not unless you turn it off and then it becomes iCloud backup.
Jeez Louise. Okay. In October, Reuters goes on.
I'll do an explainer video for this tomorrow.
A vector for this? Because this is not. And look it. If I don't know this, I guarantee you very few people know this because I thought I was keeping up on this story and apparently I'm not. In October, let me just finish the Reuters story. In October 2018, Alphabet announced a similar system to Apple's dropped plan for secure backups. It sounds like maybe Reuters got this wrong, too. The maker of Android software said users could back up their data to its own cloud, to the Google Cloud, without trusting the company with the key. Two people familiar with the project said Google gave no advance notice to governments and picked a time to announce it when encryption was not in the news. So just sneaking in under the wire. The company continues to offer the service but declined to comment on how many users have taken up the option. I don't even know where that check mark is.
don't know either. And I've never seen it. I'm sure it exists. And I'm sure Jerry Hildenbrand knows where it is, but I've not found it.
So this isn't the Android show. I'll have to get Jason Howell to tell us.
Yeah.
But weird. The FBI did not respond to a request for comment on Google's service or the agency's approach to it.
But Android, like, it makes sense because Android is also run way more like a computer. You can do all sorts of computery things on it, and you may well get a little utility that lets you device side encrypt it and then send it all to Google. I don't know.
So to recap, I don't know what the hell's going on, and no one else does.
There are a bunch of support articles and a whole white paper on this, so it is documented, but it is just not that transparent.
What should, if you want to be the most private possible and you're using an Apple device, what should you do?
Turn off iCloud backup and backup only to an encrypted, using iTunes or the Finder to an encrypted backup or disk.
So none
if
of
you
the
want to be most secure, just don't.
None of the Wi-Fi backup is safe. Backup with a cable connected to your computer and iTunes, and make sure you type in a password, good one, for the encryption.
Yeah. Not 1234.
And I would use numbers. A cable because you don't know if someone is sitting there snooping your Wi-Fi bits.
Right. So
you
want to
be
cable.
Really paranoid.
So, yeah. Okay.
A non-juice jacked cable. Because it's going to want forever, Leo.
Jeez Louise.
Don't back up. Alex is right. If you really want to be 100% safe,
don't back up.
If I turn off all backup on my phone, this is impenetrable. Oh, you also have
it is a crypto brick.
And by the way, don't use a 4 or even a 6.
Yeah. Mine's a
key passcode because that's what Grey Key and Celebrite break into.
Mine's, I thought it was 26, but it's 24 characters.
If you use a nice regular password like you would use on a website, a long random password that's going to be a pain in the butt to
type
in.
And it doesn't even have to be. It has to be. The best thing is a phrase that you can remember.
Yeah.
You know,
then
like
it's probably
unusual.
The case that even Celebrite and Grey Key don't work.
They take years.
We don't know it.
I think they said it was like a day for 6 numbers, right. And then it goes up to a couple of years real fast.
Yeah, we're working a little bit 10, in the dark because we don't know exactly what their exploit is, but it's presumed their exploit allows...
It turns off the time code and then allows brute force, yeah.
Exactly.
The time to leave.
So a good, strong passcode like Alex's. So when do you type it in every time?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
Mother McCray.
If it goes dead in the car, I have to pull over.
My problem is Face ID doesn't. Do you still use Face ID?
Oh yeah, I didn't do it until I had Face ID because most of the time it just opens.
Right.
It's when it's restarted or it doesn't recognize me or whatever because I wake up or whatever.
When you're wearing the ninja suit.
When I'm wearing the ninja suit, I have to do it every single time, you know. But
what is that clicking on the roof?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, but he did it 24 times.
It's my tabby boots, honey.
But it's actually easier to remember than most of the other ones I've had because it's just a
passphrase.
Unique,
is good. Use passphrases.
Passphrase.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's actually easy to digest advice. If you don't want your data to ever be seen by anybody else, don't back up.
Right.
Don't do Google Photos. Don't do iCloud Photos. Don't do messages in the cloud.
Don't use Facebook.
Cloud.
Don't use Twitter.
Don't use Facebook.
TikTok.
But
make sure you really need to. Like, not just because you think you fancy yourself a badass. Like, you've got to really not need this stuff.
No.
You're willing to lose it.
I back up everything everywhere. I have copies of all of my data everywhere because I don't want to lose it. I'm the fail-safe guy. I'm not the fail-secure
guy. I really want Apple to add an option to allow for encrypted backups, and I will then promptly never use it.
I have a second phone that I don't back up that I, you know, if I'm overseas, I might use, I often use that one as the one I'm walking around with. So I don't have to think about it. So
this was a good conversation. Thank you, everybody.
Alex's OPSEC is precise.
Alex really has nothing to hide. So I don't know why he's doing that. He just does it because he can.
He's so good. That's what we think, Leo. That's that's the true professional there.
And you know, the evidence of the reprobates he hangs out with.
The irony of this is, meanwhile, CIA operatives are using Strava to mind their runs, and they're not. Their OPSEC is terrible.
And our government leaders are no longer using secure phones. They're just using WhatsApp in the middle of the street with a store-bought phone.
Yeah. Well, it makes it easier to investigate them, but...
Truth.
What a world.
Yeah. Wasn't there a story a while back about how Russia thought that there was some sort of like super top secret meeting room in the dead center of the Pentagon, the plaza in the middle of the Pentagon, because they were using like fitness trackers and like consumer devices because all these really important people like
are going at the same time
and they discover, well, no, that there's a coffee shop there. that's where they're going to get coffee. Yeah.
However, I would put an operative in the coffee shop just in case.
Yeah, that'd be good.
But just one No, that's the worst place because I'll never get the person's name right. Anyway.
I have a coffee for Allison. Allison, anybody? Oh, it's Andy.
A Dobby Trap. Dobby Trap.
Yeah. Wasn't there an industrial espionage thing a while back where they found out that someone was just hanging out at a bar with a bunch of drunken techno people?
Yeah, that's the real.
They would just go there after hours. And
that's the real truth.
Yeah. The only thing I wanted to point out is that sometimes you find that you have to acquire new skills and new habits, and that there is one way to deal with all of the entities they're trying to get access to your privacy and your data is to accept that some things can be private, some things can be a little bit less so. Awareness and ability to understand what the risks are. One other part of that is just realizing that there was a time where I would use like the same simple password on any service that I didn't care about because like, well, okay, this is just like some message board, or this is just like where I'm backing up some pictures that I don't really care about. I'll just use this one, the simple six letter password I can't remember. And now no matter what it is, like I had to sign up for like four new music stores to download HD music from. I had to come up with a new, like at least 16 letter password for each one of them, because you realize that it stops becoming such a notable pain in the butt once you get into the habit of doing it all the time. And once you accept that, no, I have to have complex passwords and they have to be unique per device. And when you, every time you get a new piece of hardware or subscribe to a new service, one of your first thoughts has to be, what kind of data am I putting here? And what am I putting at risk by putting that data there? So I keep coming back to table stakes. There used to be a time where you just didn't even care about hitchhiking. And now you realize that, okay, that was nice in the 20s and 30s in Universal madcap movies, but now you can't do that anymore. You have to think hard about the kind of strangers that you're getting into contact with. Well, that's the sort of stuff I'm talking about.
I'm hoping that we see more of what Apple has been doing with the anonymized email. I'm hoping we get to a point where Apple kind of enforces that more into more places. Like my biggest problem with Apple TV, for instance, is that you sign up for a new video service and now you have to put in your email and you have to put, I'm like, look, I'm on a device. Just take the security from the device. You can do that. But they don't do, like Disney Plus wants my email and they want my thing, and I get that they want all that stuff. I don't want to give it to them. And I want
single
Apple to
sign on is your best friend.
I want Apple to just slowly enforce on all of their devices.
Yeah.
That we'll sign in for you. We're not going to tell them anything.
Yep.
And I think that the anonymized email is their first little, we're not going to scare you, so we're just going to add this one little thing.
Don't confuse that, though, with what Google and Facebook and Twitter are doing with their single sign-on, because they are getting all the information.
Right.
So it's nice to have a trusted third party like Apple, where you can
say,
my Apple Pay, my Apple credit card whenever possible, because not because I'm trying to hide from the grocery store my personal information, but just because it should get in the habit of it. It's great.
Right.
And you're right. They should do authentication that way. We have a very strong authenticated device with a secure enclave,
right,
a very good face recognition system. It would be a great thing if this would become my passcode.
And of course, if they do that, there's going to be people saying monopoly, and they're going to be saying that Apple is, shouldn't be allowed to do this to us as developers. But
ironically,
but as
Google,
users, it's to our advantage.
Google's already on that train, but you're giving Google your information, so it's not quite the same thing. They just announced that you can use Google Smart Lock and make your iPhone a trusted security hardware dongle.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yep.
But it's with Google.
But also the really important thing to remember there is, like myself included, for a long time we said that they would never sell our personal data because it's way more valuable to them. It's way too valuable to them. And then Facebook got caught selling data.
Right.
Google absolutely hasn't, but we can no longer just use that as a blanket excuse for no company would ever do
that. We also have to understand the power of these corporations. Like Verizon says, hey, we really, security of searches is important. So don't use Google. Don't use DuckDuckGo. Use our Verizon-created portal that makes sure that your searches are secure. And this is the same company that got fined $1.5 million for having something that had to be called a super cookie for tracking Verizon users everywhere. So, this is a problem.
Everybody's getting into the act. We've been doing on the last few shows the story that Google Chrome, they announced they're going to stop third-party tracking cookies. And I thought, well, that's interesting because they are in the ad business. Why would they do that? And the more I think about it, the more I realize it's a complete red herring. It's because everybody knows about third-party cookies. They have other means, so they're going to look like the good guys by, oh, yeah, no more third-party cookies.
But they're always the first party.
But they're always the first party. I want to mention Bruce Schneier, who just wrote a very good piece. I think it was in the New York Times about face recognition, saying, you know, we're doing all this focusing on face recognition. You know, making it illegal in, you know, San Francisco and other jurisdictions are starting to make it illegal to use it. He says face recognition isn't really the problem. We're banning face recognition. We're missing the point. The whole point of modern surveillance is to treat people differently. That is, in other words, to know who you are so they can treat you in the way they want to treat you. Face recognition is a small part of that. And this is exactly what we're talking about, that there are a myriad of ways, from heartbeat to gait to fingerprint to iris. You can see, you can read somebody's iris from meters away, from the MAC addresses broadcast by our smartphones at all times. There are a myriad of ways for people to identify us, for advertising companies and governments to advertise us. China is using it and using all of them to support a surveillance state. This is something. So it's not face recognition. And I think it would be nice to have a company that we could trust. Apple, for instance, randomizes MAC addresses on the iPhone. That is a little thing no one understands. No one, you know, they don't put that on the side of a hotel in Vegas. But that is a really great idea.
Right.
Yeah.
And
fingerprinting is stopping fingerprinting, too.
Yeah. So he says there's an entire industry of data brokers who make a living analyzing and augmenting data about who we are. Maybe Google says we don't sell that data. It's too valuable. Nevertheless, that data is being collected, aggregated, and then sold by a many. He says regulate data brokers. Regulate the companies, not face recognition, regulate the companies that are gathering this data and using it. And I think he's exactly right, that if we care about all this stuff, it's not face recognition is the least of our worries. But I think we do need a company we can trust. Maybe this is the one and only company we can trust.
Right now, I think that Apple's the only one really focused on whether they're not perfect as far as protecting our data, but they're the only ones that are slowly tying all these holes up.
Well, and everybody on this panel, but also as consumers, we need to really impress this on Apple. This is a valuable commodity.
Oh, I think they're clear on that.
If you do this right and you stick to your promises and you tell us the truth and you're very clear about it, you will gain hugely from this. So, Tim, I think he knows that. But I think there's also pressure from governments and others. Mm-hmm. That's something that could make you even more successful.
And the thing to remember is that the our cell phone security has proven to be not, you know, it's not as high a level priority for our legislature as abortion or gun control or other things like that.
They don't understand it. Well,
they don't understand it, and it's not. It's important. Like when the FBI comes and does a little talk for them, they go, "Oh, yeah, that's important." But if millions of people,
that's right,
send them emails,
that's right,
and march and everything else, they're going to be like, "Well, no." What I'm saying is, they're going to go, "Oh, this isn't worth it." I mean, you look at like that. That's why they don't touch gun control. Right. They're like, right, it's not, "I'm not going to die on this hill." Literally, you know.
Exactly,
and
so
the key is, as users, we will never have to worry about this as
we
long
need
as
an NRA for privacy and security.
Yes,
I think I remember reading, and I wish I remembered who produced this information, but I don't. Brand identity for young people, like people under the age of 18, are more likely to buy an iPhone than any time before. Like, so right now, the young people brand identity is with Apple. And I've always wondered why that was. And one thing that comes to mind is this idea that maybe knowing that Apple is putting like our data privacy at the forefront of what they do, that might be because it's the young people who are more active and more engaged in recognizing the fact that we shouldn't be just allowing all these companies to have access to our data. They get it a little bit faster than we do. They figured it out a little sooner than we did. And maybe that's why Apple has been such a important brand for the young people's future. I don't know.
I don't know. When I talk to young people, they don't seem to care at all. like when I talk to them about security, they're like, yeah, you know, it's all gone. Like you know, when I talk to people that are not that much younger than me and everyone down below, it always seems like
maybe they're also a little more practical. Like, maybe they understand that you don't need to have everything be 100% secure.
Well, right? But I think that they're also just a little resigned to the fact that they just feel like everything is, you know, and again, well, I'm super careful about certain things because I don't, you know, I get concerned. When I'm in the United States, I don't think about it that much. It's not like I'm constantly worried about security. I'm just worried about losing this little way of securing if needed.
But when you go places like Zimbabwe, is it more of a concern for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely
especially when you cross borders, it's a concern.
I mean, if I'm in even you know India or Cambodia or Iraq or you know those kinds of countries, you want to make sure that it's difficult, you know, to sort that out.
Yeah. All right. Good talk. Thank you, everybody. Good talk. we are doing, speaking of privacy, there's a constant battle, by the way, to get podcasts to track you. I'm very happy to say we have no way to do that. And we have, because you now, if you listen with one podcast app all the time, whether it's Apple's podcast, they do keep, you know, information about you, or Spotify. In fact, Spotify's already announced they plan to do more of that. So when you see an exclusive podcast for one particular platform, I can guarantee you the reason that's happening is so that they can track you. We want to be everywhere you go, right? We don't track you. But we do ask for some information only because whatever we can find out about our audience helps us two ways. One, make better programs for you. But two, to sell our advertising. Advertisers, you know, will say, well, I want to know everybody who's listening. We can't tell you that. But we could tell you that, you know, it's 53% male and and so that information is valuable. The way we get that is completely voluntarily from you. And if you don't want to participate, cool, man. I dig it. But if you do, our annual survey is here, twit.to/survey20. Just a few questions. You'll see as soon as you look at it what we're looking for, the kind of information, what area is your job in, what your age is, that kind of thing. Don't answer any question you're uncomfortable with. That's fine. We don't keep track of who's answering. We just look at the idea is for us to know in aggregate a little bit more about our audience. It's a big help. We do this once a year, and anything you can do to help us out, we would appreciate. twit.to/survey20. Thank you very much. Apple, according to Strategy Analytics, which is, Apple doesn't say, but Strategy Analytics has somehow figured out that Apple has sold.
Because they've got data.
They got data.
They have data from us. And
yeah, they do. They have credit card info and stuff. The Apple has sold 60 million AirPods in 2019. Make it 60 million in one. I finally broke down.
Ooh.
I finally broke. Well, you know what I want to do? I want to see.
AirPods Pro?
I want to see if these really do smell like blueberries.
Oh, God. Oh, you're not going to sniff them.
You can have Micah Sargent check for you.
Well, these are a fresh, unworn pair.
See, I want to get a green pair, so it reminds me of Plants vs. Zombies. Doesn't it remind you of one of the plants in Plants vs. Zombies?
It is kind of like
a little, like, organic. Little pea shooter.
Yeah. Man, remember how we mocked the AirPod and how that little dongle and everybody, we said, oh, it looks so horrible. That's all you see anywhere. I'm watching the NFL playoffs. All the athletes coming to the stadium.
Leo, point of logic, people who are using more modern ones, you don't see anything. So you don't know they're wearing.
They're even better. Do the AirPod Pro are a little bit less obvious, right?
They're just as obvious. They stick out.
She's wearing them. Yeah, so you're saying when you say a little more modern, you mean anything but Apple. Is that what you mean, Andy?
No. I'm saying that just because you can't see, like, they might be wearing a competitor's that fits all the way of the year, but I've never thought that that was a big deal anyway, given that particularly at the time, if you have to have two little tiny little popsicle sticks like drooping down from the ears, but it actually like keeps in contact with my phone without breaking up while I'm listening to music, I'm good.
Yeah. So a couple of things about the AirPods. You can now have the poop emoji on engraved.
Did you do that?
I put my name and my phone number on it, hoping that hoping against all odds that somebody would find these and return them to me instead of just saying, oh, good, they smell like blueberries. Let me, okay, never been opened, sealed direct from the factory, and I'm going to let you do it too, Alex, as an independent nasal tester.
Please get Micah there.
Oh, okay. just tell me, what do they smell like? Just don't, no preconceived notions.
Blueberries.
They smell just like blueberries.
And so, it was not the second time. It's like I had to close it. When I opened it, I go,
it's blueberries. But of course, it's not really blueberries. It's a highly carcinogenic chemical off-gas. But that smells.
Man, does it smell like blueberries.
It's like it smells like
juicy blueberries. It's not like.
It doesn't smell like blueberries. It's a neurotoxin that causes a form of dementia that makes things smell like blueberry. You're dead.
It was Dan's good visiting us from Orlando. I noticed your wife ran screaming. Dan, tell me.
You got to close it first.
Oh, yeah.
Let it build up.
Okay. It's got to build up. It's blueberry awesome.
Independent studio audience member. Yeah, my goodness, yeah.
It's everyone's face. I can
What's
tell
amazing is it's
like
not just that it smells like a blueberry like smell. It's like it is like a juicy, ready-to-eat blueberry.
Are they made out of recycled strawberry shortcake dolls?
Alex, sir, you have never been to the state of Maine during blueberry season. Or else you would never say anything like
it's
that.
Probably. Probably not.
But I don't know, Andy. Probably. Have you smelled those AirPods Pro yet? Maybe they do smell like that.
No, but I've had blueberry pancakes and blueberry pie in the same meal at a diner in Maine at the height of blueberry season.
Wow.
That is the definitive marker for all blueberryness.
You are Mr. Blueberry.
Well, like I say, as I grew up picking blueberries from the trees.
Was it in bushes. Maine, or is it one of those fake blueberry patches where they just plant them for the tourists?
They were simply in the backyard.
Ooh, the best kind. Yeah. Backyard blueberries.
I love backyard blueberries. These aren't wireless charging, right? Or are they?
I don't know.
Yes, they are.
They are? Yeah. Oh, look.
Yeah. Drop them on your pad.
My Lenovo has a little Qi charge pad. If I just put it right here, it'll just light up. And it does. Look at that. That is really cool. All right, I can put my snozzberry.
Don't forget those are there.
Yeah, really. It's a lot to spend for headphones that are that easy to lose, I got to say. I wasn't going to do it. I resisted it.
Are you the kind of person that easily loses things? I consider myself somebody that, you know, I keep track of my stuff and I don't lose things. So that's never been a problem or concern for me. But I've read so many articles about people losing multiple headphones. And actually, Russell Holly of iMore and Android Central and all the other sites that are a part of the Future family, like, he just lost his AirPods Pro right before CES. So it does happen, but I never was concerned.
You've never
before.
Lost your AirPods?
I've left them at home.
I have to knock on some wood right now, but I've never lost anything important.
Like, let me just put it this way. I'm on my fourth pair of AirPods.
Fourth
okay,
pair.
I can't. At some point, that's just carelessness. That I'm saying that at some point, you need to say the nanny part of your brain needs to say, no, we're going to be using wired earphones, Leo. And let me explain why. Because we gave you three opportunities to have wireless earphones, and you lost them three times.
That's
no,
just
I think that
carelessness.
Maybe that will teach you responsibility. and I'm saying that as someone who, as I speak right now, I know that I have a pair of AirPods somewhere in the office, but I don't know where they are.
Oh, yeah. Well, it depends on your definition of lost. I know they're in the house.
They're missing. I'm not Mario Kondo'd enough to realize that I would have to actually take everything down to bare wood and walls to definitively
one pair,
find them. That might be simpler to find.
I bought
them.
Another pair, and then I found the other pair under the bed because I was wearing them in bed, and they fell under the bed.
Oh, yeah.
So, by the way, how much does this cost? $250? You'd think I'd get some Apple stickers.
You didn't get stickers?
Where's my...
Oh, man.
You have to buy the Mac Pro for the stickers, Leo.
There's no stickers.
I guess you're below the
for that price.
Required,
and how much do the wheels for those earphones cost?
What?
No, they have racks now, Andy.
There's no stickers.
They're ear rack mounted.
There is a pamphlet on how to use them.
I will say that my untechnical wife was just talking this morning about how much she loves her AirPods. Like, it was just like a very she lost them for a couple months.
Yeah.
So she misplaced them. She's wandering around trying to find them, and finally found them. And it was like a couple days later, she's like, oh my goodness, I don't know how I lived without these before. Like that's, and she had like, I don't know how many pairs of Bluetooth headphones and wired headphones and all kinds of other things. And it was always this constant frustration. And the idea that you can pull them out, they're generally
pretty
charged.
Sweet, right? Pop
them in. I always, it always seems random. Like I try to keep charging them, but I always feel like I'm using them for a long time before I have to plug them back
too.
In.
Yeah.
Like you just kind of keep on feeling like you're putting them in the case and you're like, this should run out.
And you hear that sound like, do, 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 do. And you're like, what? That still happens?
Yeah, exactly.
Leo, do you still have your instructions for the AirPods Pro? I want to know whether or not Apple took away or removed the reference to AirPower finally on the instructions.
I've already lost the instructions. Where'd they go? How could I have lost them already?
I mean, they probably have taken them off.
These are the warranty ones.
I threw them in the air.
You're like a magician.
Oh, here they are. Wait a minute.
Here we go.
Okay, AirPods Pro. So I'm looking for an AirPower.
I think
mention.
It was one of the last pages about charging. I think it says something about AirPower.
Wirelessly. AirPods Pro, charge in the case. Place case with status light facing up on a Qi certified charger. That's hard to say. Qi certified charger.
Qi shells
on the Qi charger. On a Qi certified. Stop sniffing my AirPods. Or charge using the Lightning connector. It does not. Yeah, I think he really likes that blueberry odor. I'm telling you, it's carcinogenic.
Again, it's a neurotoxin. One of the side effects is making things smell like blueberries, for God's sake.
I can't believe it smells so much like blueberries.
It does
not
mention.
You know what? $30,000 for a Mac Pro is not too much to spend.
You know what? They did a new print run on the pamphlets after the $50 million. They said we better print some more pamphlets because they took AirPower out of the pamphlets. Anyway, congratulations, Apple, on making a product that everybody has to have several of. Wow, something's going on with my roly-poly. There we go. No? I can only see the top four stories.
Wow.
So we're done.
That's fine.
Thank you, everybody,
the top four stories.
For joining me on the show today. Okay, let's see. What else? You know, it's something wrong with the scrolly is stuck. I have a stuck scrolly. How could that? You know, I wonder if it's the AirPods are screwing up my mouse. You know what? I'm putting these way over here. I bet you that's it. It's sending in. No.
New active jamming features to interfere with all non-Apple Bluetooth
devices.
Now, aren't
you sorry for blaming the AirPods? They're crying in the corner.
I blamed the AirPods and threw them. Thank you. Give me your iPad. At least
it's
that
like
still
Apple
works.
Is daring the Justice Department to file a suit against them.
Oh, this made me really mad. This made me really mad. Congress had hearings in Boulder, Colorado. That's not what made me mad, by the way.
Boulder's a great place.
DHH?
I live there.
I love DHH. Awesome. Yes. DHH and the Tile, more than DHH, the CEO of Tile, who said Apple acted anti-competitively by putting Find My iPhone in the iPhone. Tile makes a Bluetooth tracker.
It's really big. You can't stick a Tile to your iPhone and then expect to use it.
And I don't know if I agree with her contention that by putting... I think there is a merit in the overall complaint that Apple can do stuff with iPhone apps that other companies can't do, right?
Yes.
So Tile does not have all of the location features that Apple's iPhone could allow. Apple has, you know, monopoly in that respect. Yeah. She was there testifying in front of Congress. So were a few other CEOs, including and then we're just testifying about Apple. The guys who do this is probably why they were in Boulder. You know those pop sockets that go on the back of your phone? That's from Boulder. I know that because my
and
son.
And then
went
now dock it for the pop socket, and you can rock it.
You can dock the rocket up the pocket of the socket. This is a very Danny Kaye moment. The pop socket guy said, we have to sell through Amazon. We tried not selling through Amazon. It cost us $10 million. But Amazon basically, you know, stole our design and started making their own. I guess that's what he was saying.
I think he just said it was hard. I don't think he even said it.
He didn't
they
say
stole
that.
It.
Yeah, I think he says that there was
they didn't like working with
or regulations on selling. Yeah.
This whole thing. And then David Hanemeyer Hansen, is the founder of Basecamp, and I've talked to him many times. He invented Ruby on Rails. He's kind of legendary in our business, despite his propensity for buying very, very expensive automobiles. but what could possibly be wrong with that?
Being a bit of a Twitter drama magnet.
He's a drama magnet. He's the guy who said, my wife got a different credit limit on the Apple card.
Outrage should never be, would never presage investigation. The investigation should always come first.
Yeah. Well, that's what Twitter's, we're in this world now where Twitter and the outrage engine, you know, precedes everything. In any event, he said that these companies, what did he say? He had a great line and I can't read it because I can't scroll.
You're our only hope. Help us.
Help us.
Yeah.
Help us, Congress. You're our only
what
hope.
What was he complaining about with Ruby on Rails?
He said that, he said the digital ecosystem had been, quote, colonized by a handful of big tech companies. Help us, Congress. You're our only hope.
Oh,
he
man.
Doesn't like
that's not a great way to leave. For that's not customary for a tech company to say, please Congress legislate and interfere with our business, because that's not that great.
It's a long-standing tradition. If you go to the EU, for instance, a lot of the EU's regulations and privacy things, that whole, you know, what Jeff Jarvis calls the Leitungsrecht, the whole snippet thing, came because publishers, magazine and newspaper publishers, went to the courts in EU and said, these guys, this Google, they're really making it hard for us. And so a lot, I think it's not unusual for companies that can't compete in the marketplace to go to legislators and say, fix it.
Uneducated legislators by large part.
Yeah.
We sold a green screen plugin called DBMAT for a long time.
Yes.
You know, and we made a lot of money on it. I mean, it was a solid $30,000 a month that comes in on a 128K unprotected plugin. Like there was no password, there was no nothing. It just installed, and it just kind of came in. And I knew, everybody knew, that as soon as Apple fixes the green screen, because their green screen plugin in Final Cut was so bad, that the reason that everyone was buying ours is because it was the only way to make it work. That the meal train would be over.
You'd be Sherlocked eventually.
I knew I was going to be Sherlocked eventually. Like, it was like not a, you know, it was like that was coming, you know, and I wasn't. So when Apple came out with Final Cut 10 and they had a great green screen plugin in there, I was like, well, we're done there. We're going to move on to something else. You know, now, and the thing is that
they had done it 2 weeks after you came out with DVMAP, maybe.
That was bad timing. That would have been bad timing.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that they're not, and the thing is that you could see that it was there. And definitely when you're working with any of these big companies, you know, I mean, I've worked with a lot of the big companies. You know that they could squash you in a second.
Yeah.
And you have
to be conscious of that. I would love to go to Congress and say, you know, there's way too many podcasts. You've just got to limit the number of shows available.
But the other thing, though, is that it is these companies have made it easier to sell than it ever has been. Like, when we look at this, I mean, the idea...
They do have a monopsony in the Apple Store, though, right?
But it's less than 50%.
By the way, it's going to go to the Supreme Court. That is
their... Okay, the Apple Store, though, that's their store. Like, they have a monopoly on their store.
It's the only store...
For far less than half of the world's population. And definitely less than half of the U.S.
But it's also, there's also an argument...
Go to Android.
There's also an argument to be made that Apple has proprietary access to private APIs that give them the ability to compete in a way that no third-party developer can. But that goes right back to our previous argument, because would you trust any random person with access to the APIs that
There's
cover location and secure? Yeah, so you have to have some sort of, like, in my perfect world, there would be a vetting system where certain other trusted companies will do it. It's an incredibly gray and fuzzy line to try to walk, but I do think that there will not only does there have to be, but there will eventually be regulated to be some sort of bigger system than we have right now with the App Store.
But I really thought that part of the conversation, if we're talking about Apple, that they would be talking about borderline abuse that Apple wreaks upon developers through controlling all of their apps through required APIs. Like if Apple suddenly decides that a new cloud service is absolutely critical to the future of the company, and the future of the and the future of this cloud service will be boosted by forcing every single developer to support it, whether that API is finished, usable or sensible for the product that the developer is making, they can inflict that demand, that change upon the developer. The number of stories that you get from developers saying that we had all these plans for 2019 to spend most of the money and time that we spend enhancing our product to finally bringing this wonderful feature that all of our users have been demanding. Unfortunately, we had to spend that time instead supporting an API that we don't use, that makes no sense to us, that Apple is not is so new that Apple hasn't really documented, but Apple will not allow our app to be updated in the App Store unless it supports this new API. So Apple has a lot to answer for, but not being able to track a tile tracker through the Find My app probably to me is not one of them.
Well, and I just want to say, like, as someone who has sold a lot of software, I just have to say that in the old days, I have to now figure out how I'm going to distribute that, how am I going to secure it, how am I going to do the e-commerce for it, how am I going to do the promotion for it, how am I going to do all these things that the App Store took away and made it simpler. I wouldn't even consider doing it on my own anymore. I mean, I would absolutely put all, if I develop software again, I would absolutely put it on the App Store, and I wouldn't complain, and I just move on, because it has never been better than what it is now. I mean, as someone who went through the trouble of doing it and all the stuff that I had to do of being able to distribute updates and know that everybody's going to get. I mean, the idea that you could distribute updates and that everybody actually knows that there's an update and it's super simple for them to update and do their thing is amazing. It is amazing. As someone who did this, I mean, like, we'd update and, you know, 10% of the people would even know it was there and it was free, you know, and then they'd come back and complain and they were talking, oh, this doesn't work. I'm like, that's like three versions ago, you know. And so the idea that you can keep everybody up to date on it, that you can move those things down, it's not perfect. It's definitely not better, but holy smokes, is it better than it used to be?
Well, okay.
I mean, it was so painful. Like,
so,
I'm sorry.
There's two things. There's the APIs. And by the way, that's historically been a problem. For years, Microsoft was accused of having secret APIs in Windows. Right. There were even books
written
about it.
Well, they did, right, for Internet Explorer.
They did. And any company that found them and used them was sadly upset when they got deprecated, but that's the price you pay.
Although, to their credit, and credit is the wrong word, I mean, Cydia and other jailbroken app stores existed for years, and they only stopped when they became non-economically viable. Apple never, you know, never executed evil, sinister plans to destroy all the jailbroken
app
stores.
Well, they just kind of, every time there's a jailbreak, they turned it off.
But they could have done a lot of things to make their lives really miserable. Okay. They never went out. They never, like, put DMCA takedowns on. As far as I know, they never personally sued Sarek, for example.
I think that, you know, Apple is a little bit of a, speaking of nanny states, a little bit of a nanny in what it allows in the App Store. It doesn't allow some political comment in the App Store. It doesn't allow adult content in the App Store.
Yeah.
And so it is a monopoly. You know, it's actually technically a monopsony, and that's what the Supreme Court's going to be ruling on. A monopoly is if you have if you're dominant in sales. A monopsony is if you're dominant in buying.
And it's also like one of the
things. If you interpret Apple as a buyer of apps that it then resells to, which is kind of a stretch.
But like an aggregator.
An aggregator.
But they straight up say, we're not the owners of these apps. All we are is a store where people shelve their apps.
Of course, that's what they say, but that's what the Supreme Court is going to rule on, because in effect they are, because they're the only place you can buy apps. You have to, so it's as if you went to a fruit store, if you will, and the only place you could buy apples was from that particular fruit store. They would be,
or if Walmart said that they were all independent contractors, everyone on the shelf. Yeah. But the hard part, like the thing for me, that like the in general, the internet is really bad at multiple truths, and it is possible that the App Store launched, they were like, I remember that with Palm Info Center, and I was paying a fortune and getting terrible support, and it was, the app market for mobile was terrible, and for developers they were being charged way more than 30%, 55%, 70% more than that. And it's possible that the App Store was an incredibly good model in order to get the modern app economy, the pop app economy, actually going, for people to trust software again on mobile devices, and to get buy-in from all the developers and the millions and millions of customers that followed.
That's called platform. But it's also possible. That's a platform.
Yeah, but it's also possible that over the last 10 years, we and the market and the customer base has matured to a point where the App Store model and the agency model are no longer the one-size-fits-all solutions that really helped get them going in the beginning, and we have to evolve them to a more shared and flexible model.
If I were going to write an amicus brief for Apple, I would say when you go to the Supreme Court, you point out that progressive web apps, PWAs, can be written and in no way limited by Apple. And so anybody can write an app that's downloaded from the web directly onto an iPhone. And and what Apple should do is make sure that there's first-class support for progressive web apps. And then it's over because you don't have a monopoly anymore.
That's what they said to Playboy, remember? They said, you guys can make a web app. And they did.
A web app. And honestly, that's a reasonable argument. As long as web apps can be as good as native apps from the App Store, you're done. And if somebody wants adult content, they do that. I mean, they kind of argue that, well, that's what the browser's for, you know. But make PWAs a first-class citizen on the iPhone, and I don't think you have a case.
And I think with WebGL, and I'm guessing, pure guess, that Apple is going to have Web Metal ready fairly soon. Once all that stuff is in place, those are going to be much more performant than they are today. Yeah.
And then just like on the Macintosh, because that's what happens on the Macintosh. You have an app store, but if you're a developer like Rich Siegel and you say, well, IBB Edit needs to do more, you don't have to sell it on the App Store. And if you could do that on the iPhone, it's over. Then say, well, look, if you want safe, secure apps that we vet, get them from the App Store. But if you're willing to take a chance, download your apps from a website as a progressive web app. I think that's a great compromise. Our Twit forums, the twit.com community, is in a program called Discourse that actually does a very nice PWA version. And if you compare it to the App Store version, I prefer the
PWA. It's way better.
Yeah,
it's way better.
So as long as Apple doesn't start pulling back, and now they won't because of this, pull back on Safari's PWA capabilities, I think...
Yeah, I think it makes sense.
That's a great solution. You know, it has to be app-like, but, you know, I think that Twitter's... PWA is a very good app on the experience on the iPhone.
And then fix Daniel Jalkut's APIs and everyone will be happy again.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. And you talk to developers and you understand there is reasonable friction from developers about the App Store. There's things they're not happy with.
Well, it's the lack of consistency. It's like Jalkut, like that app was approved every day for 10 years. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, we'd realize that this is not really like the API you should be using. And he's like, I filed this radar 8 times, guys, seriously.
Yeah.
Right.
Tim Cook is in Ireland. Mr. Cook is on his way to Davos in Switzerland, where he's going to have lunch with the president and a bunch of big shots. Ireland's probably pretty cold and damp right now, too.
He's not as cold as Davos. I do not miss it.
But there's better skiing in Davos. He was speaking as he got an award from IDA Ireland, the state agency responsible for foreign direct investment, celebrating Apple's 40-year history in Ireland, where, of course, the Irish wraparound and the Dutch sandwich began. By the way, Google has announced they are no longer going to use that, but they don't have to because they get a tax break anyway, so there's no point.
And Amazon gets tax breaks in the U.S.
So yeah, so there's really, you don't need the Irish wraparound. It's the double Irish and the, what is it called? It's the double Irish...
Dutch sandwich, isn't it?
Double Irish Dutch sandwich, I think that's what it's called. I can never...
Also the most dangerous cheerleading move in competitive cheerleading. They should ban it.
Cook said, talked about AR. He's talking about AR again, kids. For a while, that's all he could talk about. And then he stopped. And I thought, uh-oh. But now he says, I'm excited about AR. My view is it's the next big thing. It will pervade our entire lives. He visited a Dublin development firm called War Ducks. I don't know. He says, I guess they're a game developer, War Ducks. He also said...
I'm super excited about AR. I'm not excited about games with AR.
Yeah.
I haven't played any that I thought were...
No. VR for games, AR for life.
But there's so many cool things with AR I've been playing with it that are just awesome.
Outside of AR, which Tim couldn't stop talking about, he says he's extremely excited about the role technology can play in healthcare. He says, this intersection has not yet been explored very well. I think you could take the simple idea of having preventative things and find many more areas... where technology intersects healthcare, and I think all of our lives would probably be better off for it. And there's a ton of money to be made. He didn't mention that, but I did. most of the money in healthcare goes to the cases that weren't identified early enough. Yeah, you're dying now, so let's fix you. It will take some time, but the things we are doing now that I'm not going to talk about today, those give me a lot of cause for hope. Diagnostic stuff, early warning stuff.
Well, again, I think that there's a cross-section when we trust the company to hold on to our data. Of if I have anonymized data and I know all this health information and I have DNA information, I can start modeling things that we could never model without huge samples.
Yeah.
So the idea that I can see things.
The problem
in your,
is the place you go to get your DNA sample does not have the until Apple does DNA.
Right.
Testing.
Or they integrate with
or
that.
Or they do a deal with 23andMe or something that says, look, only we will get this information.
Or some kind of thing. But when you connect that and you connect all that health data, you're going to be able to see things oftentimes months or even years before, you know, they're going to start. And it's things that they don't even know to look for yet. If they're just looking at all the data and you're cutting through that data, you're going to start seeing, okay, this person ended up having this or this person ends up having this. And then you can start tracking back. And looking at all the things that happened to them, and then compare those things, and it's going to be groundbreaking when it happens. It's just that keeping it private is the issue.
There could be some bumpy road before that. There's the history. I'm talking about probably more than a decade out, because the history of tech and medicine is littered with a lot of things that were a lot of interesting ideas that were productized, for lack of a better word, well before the science was in on it. And the difficulty is that you have these, once you turn a lot of these digital health services into just like these commercials that say, ask your doctor about this pill, even though your doctor probably would have brought it up himself if he thought it were appropriate for your current condition. When people come in saying, hey, when people say, hey, for $400, I'm going to go get this full body scan. And then they find that, oh, well, there's a thickening in this artery near your heart that is unusual for someone like you. And so now suddenly someone has to go through a whole bunch of diagnostic tests, even though it's likely that if there's no symptoms and there's no family history of heart disease, this is just one of the aberrations that is normal for the human body. So the problem that we don't want to face is that, well, we did see that you have a genetic marker that is associated with this disease. So we're going to put you through a very, very expensive set of diagnostic tests just to make sure we rule that out. So it'll be amazing if the only thing that technology and medicine does is automate paperwork and automate all these everything that a doctor's office has to be able to provide in records and forms to insurers and certifications, and take that load off of the actual practitioner. And also just the simple things like universally, here are all the prescriptions that this person is taking. You're about to add a new one to it. Here are some things that you should know about that before you decide to write this script. I'm still amazed that when I was taking care of somebody, that it was the first time that anybody had actually gone through and said, okay, here are the 8 pills that this person is taking per day. And a simple idiot's search said that maybe you shouldn't be taking this with this, and this also has the same effect as this other pill. And once you just simply not saying, hey, I Googled this, doc, and you're wrong. Once you come back to the next appointment and saying, here are all of the pills that mom is taking, could you take a look at it and see if perhaps any of these are superfluous? And that load got knocked down to just like 4 or 5. That's the sort of stuff that is of immediate benefit, that isn't theoretical at all. Although I do agree with you that once a huge data set of health data becomes anonymized and available to researchers, that could be quite revolutionary, either for enhancing the health of people or enhancing the number of reasons that insurance companies have to deny you coverage. We will not know, but it'll be interesting in the next 30, 40 years.
It's not all bad. You know, one time when I was in high school, I got a painkiller and a thing that keeps your balance after hitting my head really hard. And football is great. And they were 2 different doctors that didn't know the other ones were doing it, and it was best week ever. It was awesome.
Okay, don't do
ever
that.
Since then, everything smells like blueberries to me.
No, it was when the letters were peeling off the blackboard. In class, I was like, whoa, and I realized that no one else is seeing this, so I'm not going to fall over. Yeah, yeah.
I have to say, they've already kind of done a lot of the benefit. I already see it. For instance, now, because Kaiser, my health care provider, allows health records to be stored in iPhone, I think that's fantastic. I've got all my health records here. Yep. In a way, by the way, that's a lot better than the way I was doing it when I went to the Kaiser website. And I just was looking at the health things. I could see what my heart rate is. Right now, which is an amazing 59 beats per minute, I am clear. If it were 300, I'd be in trouble. But here's one that's new, and I love environmental sound levels. I can now see it says, I have not been exposed over the last 7 days to any dangerous sound pressure levels, and I can even get a graph of all the different. Yeah. That is fantastic. So now, admittedly, that's not saving my life, but as you incrementally add more and more features like that, I think we're getting close to something like that. I just feel like this is fantastic information.
We just have to remind ourselves that access to more data is not necessarily therapeutically useful, and that typically the moment in which it's time to start actively treating a problem with your health is when a symptom presents itself. That shows you that something is actually well. No, that's traditionally when doctors kind of move in. There is such a thing as preventative medicine. I'm not denying that. But if someone says, "Here are your numbers for this,"
well, that's what Tim was saying. They don't wait until it's too late, right?
Yeah.
Right. No, but so I'm not sure I agree, Andy, with you. Sure. And here's why. Some of the things that I've read about the Apple Watch saving people's lives has to do with the ECG monitoring, where there's been a number of people who didn't know that they had an issue with their heart. Their Apple Watch just kind of said, you know, we noticed that you've had some weird things happening with your heart. Maybe you should go talk to your doctor. And they went talk to their doctor, and their doctor said, it's probably nothing, but we'll check it out anyway. And it turned out it was something. And these are people who, if they went unchecked, may have actually had a really bad thing happen to them, a heart attack or something. How many times have you heard of young people who are way too young to have had a heart attack out of the blue die from a heart attack? This is one of those circumstances under which, like, that may have been caught and treated before it turned into a life-threatening incident. And that to me, that's like not waiting until the symptom comes up. That's just having something on your body that's keeping track of you on a regular basis. At some point, if there is something unusual, that sensor says to you, hey, we noticed that something's a little bit unusual. Maybe you should talk to your doctor about it.
You're absolutely right. But a bad EKG I would consider that an actual symptom. As opposed to, here's a pile of data, let's sift through it to look for anything that's aberrant or that is outside of the bell curve for someone of your age. And once you start going on a fishing expedition trying to look for a problem that may or may not exist, again, EKG monitoring, that is actually real. That is, your heart should not be doing that. That's not just simply... it's not just like your heart was racing for... 10 minutes last week and hasn't recurred before or since. That's more like you don't know exactly what stresses are inside your body. You don't have enough sensors to understand how that was going, but you're absolutely right. But I'm just saying that I believe that an ECG monitor that is describing an actual symptom that is presenting itself.
And I also think that, I think that the issue is, I don't think anyone's going to do anything with the data for quite some time. I think that what's going to happen is we're going to start seeing data. And then they're going to start tying it in, and you start, when you connect it to the health records and when people are willing to share those into the system, you're going to start seeing things that people are dying, and this marker happens 6 months before all the time. You know, and it gets to a point where the correlation rate is high enough that you do decide that person should probably get a test when they get that, because it's more than 50% of the time they got 6 months. You know, and I think we're going to start seeing that when we start seeing the data, because and I think that a lot of that stuff also, when we get back to prescriptions, it's going to be like we're going to see the data that's going to show us that you're not reacting well to that prescription drug, and you don't have to tell the doctor that. The doctor can get an alert, or if you decide to do that or whatever, that is, that's there. I think that's where we're going. And I think it's going to take a long time, but we've been working on it for a long time too.
I want to say happy birthday, hover.com. It's 11 years old today. Hover is our preferred domain registrar. We love Hover. I know a lot of you have watched us talk about Hover in the past, and many people, including Steve Gibson, who I think it came to it independently. He was kind of shocked when I said, oh, yeah, they're our sponsor. He said, oh, because I was looking. He was with one of the older, better known registrars, and was just really sick and tired of their poor service, their upselling. And he asked on Twitter, who's the best domain registrar? And it was universal. Everybody agreed. Hover.com. We love Hover. I have many, many domain names registered. That's why I'm logging in right now. I've got two-factor on it. That's going to take me just a second because I want to show you I've got a lot of domain names. And right now is a good time to get a domain from hover.com. Hover's turning 11, which means if you click the link, you'll see some big sales. .com, $11 a year. Design, $1. .art, $1. And we were talking on iOS Today just a couple hours ago about getting a wiki. And I convinced Micah he should get a wiki. He registered sergeant.wiki for $1. $1. I have my own wiki address. I have my own email address. Having a domain is great. For instance, email's a really good example. You shouldn't be really using a Gmail or a Hotmail or a Yahoo or an Outlook address. You can use those services, but you should have your own custom domain, Lindsay's email or whatever. Yeah,
I think I have 30 or 40 URLs on Hover.
Like I know I do. Yeah. I haven't counted, but I know it's a ton of them, yeah. Including an email domain. That way you can move around whenever you've got, it's a bit of a list.
You never know when you're going to need another URL.
Well, like when I wanted to set up our Twit community, I happen to have twit.community that I had registered.
Right.
Perfect for our forums. Yep. When I set up our Mastodon, I had twit.social set up. And that's just one of maybe a dozen twit dot domains I have. Hover has, of course, .com, .net, all the big ones. But they have lots of very nice custom domains at a very affordable price. With every domain you get, Whois privacy protection free. Let's find a domain. Let's say a domain for, what should we say? Say Karsten. Let's look at some Karsten domains. So I'm just going to enter in Karsten, and it's going to suggest a bunch of TLDs. It's searching 446 different registries. Karsten.art, Karsten.inc, Karsten.co.club.app.
And Karsten, now you're going to have to go register those really quickly because everyone sees them now.
Karsten.cloud. I use Laporte.cloud for my Synology. Karsten.computer.host. That's good. If you ever want to host a show, Karsten, owning Karsten.host wouldn't hurt.
I do not want to host a show.
Karsten Software, Karsten Solutions, Karsten Boutique, Karsten LLC, Karsten.actor. You want to be an actor? .band.camera. I use Leo.camera. That links to my Smug Mug. That's where all my best pictures are. I could also, if somebody hadn't taken Leo.photo or Leo.pictures, I could use that, but I like Leo.camera. I am a camera. It goes on. And Karsten.dental. Karsten, I know you secretly want to be a dentist. It's not too late to get, completely available. These are all at hover.com. Very easy to navigate. Not all that upselling. And let me go back to my domains because I want to show you how easy DNS is. When I set up my wiki, for instance, I went to Laporte.wiki and I just changed that the beautiful, I've got Laporte Report. That would have been a good one. It's easy to modify the DNS, either send the name servers to somebody else or use the DNS settings built right into hover.com. Look how clean and simple that is. That's what I love about Hover. Lots of sales. If you didn't get there in time for the 11th anniversary, there are always sales on top-level domains. You should always check those out. It is a great way to get an email address that's custom, that's unique to you. It's a great way to set up your next website, your business. By the way, I wouldn't even name a business without going to hover.com first and getting the domain names associated with it, right? These days, you got to have
that. We open this probably every week or two where you're thinking about something. Oh, I want to do this thing, and I need a URL. And and it's part of the decision process. Like, can I get that URL?
Yeah. I immediately got my kids' names. In fact, if you know somebody's having a baby or you're having a baby, get the kids' names registered now. I have abbylaporte.com and henrylaporte.com. I registered those when they were born for 20 years, and I've recently renewed Abby through 2030. And Henry, he's going to come up next year. I'll get another 10 years on him. It's just a fantastic place to create a domain name. Easy to use, nice people, great tech support. It's just the place to go. If you're starting a business, if you want to do email, if you want to do a family wiki, I just set up my family wiki. You can't get in, so don't try it, Laporte.wiki. But in fact, you see, it's warning, security risk ahead. That's all right. I accept the risk and continue. If you go to, if you, my wiki, by the way, I named it the 4 a.m. wiki because I set it up at 4 a.m. Saturday night.
Very scientific.
Very scientific. It's a family wiki. That's where I put stuff that we want to share. Right. And it's easy for everybody to do. There's you'll find 1,000 ways to use it. 10% off your domain extension for a full year at hover.com/twit. Get a domain name that represents you, your passion, your interests. Get Hover. Hover.com/twit. It is a great place to register all your things. All the things. Hover.com/twit. Thank you, Hover, for your support. Thank you for supporting us by using that special domain name. Hover.com/twit. Now, time for the picks of the week. Let me start with the guy on the far right, Mr. Rene Ritchie.
Okay, so this just was announced yesterday, and I watched every video I could find on it. It's from Edelkrone, which is sort of a higher-end video gear company, but they make a lot of things that were previously incredibly high-end, sort of quasi-affordable for like the prosumer market. And for a while now, they've had a set of robotic camera accessories.
Ooh,
they've had a head that
we need this. It's a mini jib, a little baby jib.
But it's also fully automated, so they have a modular system. You can get sliders. You can get heads. You can get basic heads or 3D heads that pan and tilt.
You can connect them all together.
So the cool thing about this, though, is that you mount the jib, then you mount one of their heads on it. If you want to, you don't have to, but if you want to, then you can place the camera where you want it. Press a button, place it up to six other ways. Press those buttons, and then it will move with your desired level of ease between any and all of those camera positions, and even just loop back and forth if you so choose. You can remote control it if you want, but ideally you set where you want it to start, you set where you want it to go through, and you set where you want it to end, and then it just does it for you both sideways, vertically, horizontally, and diagonally. So you can get some amazing shots, even if you're by yourself, which is what really sold me on it.
Oh, for any YouTuber, right? Or, you know, when you're doing vector, for us, I just told John to buy a couple because this is exactly what we were looking for mere hours ago, is a way to do easy jib shots, smooth, easy jib shots. Look at that influencer. She is golden.
I think that's just for the jib. So but the head module, it's
you got to get a head too, which is probably the expensive part. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about $3,000. If you get both, it's about $1,500 for the jib, about $1,500 if you get that head.
They're having a sale to the end of the month, but still, you need the head because it's one thing to have the jib move. You got to also have the look at that. This is what
they also
have
little robotic legs,
right?
If you want tripod,
wait a minute, it'll walk.
No, not this. Well, you can modular it all together, so you could put this on top of one of their motorized leg units, and it'll drive around and get the shots that you want to. The whole thing is
amazing.
That is beautiful.
And their sliders are good. They've heard nothing but good things.
Is it both pulling focus, too? It looks like it's pulling focus.
It has an optional focus module that you can buy for your camera, and it'll stick on the lens and then do the focus for you as well.
Oh,
so you see that module on the right of the on the left of the camera?
Yeah, they're using it with DSLR, so clearly it has some pretty hefty.
I have
heard some people put C200s on it, but you can't do the full extension. That's over the legal limit, so you have to extend it less to make up for the weight.
But John, I see a lot of them have big counterbalance weights on them.
A BMD, a Blackmagic 6K would probably be in the weight range.
Oh, and that new SG, I forget what it's called, but they have a new camera that's 6K, but just literally just a body. Right. It's so small. So, I mean, it's getting really, really good.
I love it that you're all over video now, Rene. Like, you're becoming like a little mini Alex.
I'm like a mini Alex, yeah.
<That's>
a mini budget Alex.
I give you a full authority to buy that and a head. And you know what, John? Get that with the Canon E200. We're going to get a little mirrorless Canon.
I got the EOS R, which is really good.
M200. This is a little it's APS-C, and Canon's pushing it for streamers because it'll do live streaming, and you can change lenses. It uses I don't remember what lens system it uses, but fairly inexpensive. And I think that's sitting on that. See if they have a focus pull module for the the
Canon's
M200.
Canon's got good color too, which is why I like them.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, good pick. Thank you, Rene. You just cost me $3,000.
That's amazing.
It's already pushed out to, like, I think 2 weeks or 3 weeks for delivery. So I wanted to make sure we got it out quickly.
I'm still waiting for my mini ATEM that Alex got me to buy.
Me too.
Ago. Yeah. Where's
it's
that?
Still back ordered.
They're making them as fast as they can.
Yeah. Lori Gill, what, yes. What else should I buy?
Well, you did just get yourself a pair of iPods Pro. Ooh, so maybe blueberry. You should get yourself a beautiful leather case, the Air Snap Pro from 12 South.
Oh, sold. Ooh, look how pretty that is.
Yeah, it's really good looking. And they've done a minor update to this particular model.
This is why you don't lose your AirPods?
Yeah, I keep them hooked to my fanny pack all the time. It's true. Mm. So they've added an S-clip instead of the standard clip that they use. So this is a removable clip, which is really nice for people who don't necessarily want to use it. And it comes with a wrist strap. So I don't see how that is ever going to be useful, but there's someone out there who's going to think that a wrist strap is useful, and it does come with it. So,
and
yeah,
you can charge it
with
the case on. It's got a little.
Yep. Yeah, it has the charging.
Did you buy baby blue, black?
Baby blue is the best color. It looks so good.
Really?
Yeah.
See, Lisa always says, oh, you'll always buy the brown, Leo. Brown. She hates brown. Maybe I'll get the black and throw her an S-curve. Really nice. AirPods.
Yeah.
It's the AirSnap Pro from 12 South, which does great stuff. Mm-hmm. All right, Andy, it's your turn.
I'm just going to make some changes here. If I'm sick and tired of all the really great video that video hardware that Renee is putting in. So I'm just
Crane Cam 2000 has reemerged.
I'm going to intentionally tank my video settings because now trying to compete with him is just useless. So now then, okay, that's better.
Much nicer.
Actually, this is a camera based recommendation. I often say that like I'll be reviewing something or taking a look at something and saying, "Wow, for $600, this is really not very good, but for $110, this is really incredible." And so the pick of the week is the DX1 iPhone camera. This came out 4 years ago for $600 it has a pop-out lightning port. And so basically you click it onto the end of your iPhone, you run an app that controls it. It has a 20 megapixel Sony sensor. It's built like a nice, like an old fashioned cigarette lighter. It has a sliding cover, all these nice things. And the problem was that for $600, it really didn't work very well. It wasn't very, the app kept losing contact with the camera. And when you talk about, this is a conventional camera, meaning that the impetus is usually on you. The camera's job as a conventional camera is to record as much data as possible so that you can then dump it into a photo editor and create those really nice details, that nice color and lighting that you want. And it really, the weird thing is the $600 camera could not compete with the photos that an iPhone was generating, because it was doing all that Photoshop, so to speak, on its own. Now, so DxO, that was kind of a failure, and now they're being clearanced out. Amazon has them for $127 plus a $15 coupon if you click a button, down to $110. And for $110, this is a really interesting camera. It's like this pebble-sized 20 megapixel camera you can have in your pocket at all times to take pictures with when, for whatever reason, your phone isn't going to do, or whether you're in sort of a 20 megapixel raw photo taking sort of mood. And the best way to use it, I found, was it'll actually work independently if you don't have it connected up to an iPhone. It has its own shutter button, and also after its initial release, they added a little update to its little LCD screen on the back to make it into a kind of viewfinder. It's 2 pixels deep, so you're not going to get like all the tonality, but if you want to line up a shot, it'll work just fine. And the big deal is that if you forget this is an iPhone camera, you're talking about a super 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 compact, as in never leave the house without it camera with its own rechargeable battery, a 20 megapixel really good Sony sensor, which records directly onto SD cards, recharges via micro SD, and its native RAW file format is just Adobe DNG. So you don't need the support from DxO. You're not going to get any. You can just use this as this little like snapshot camera that will take these beautiful RAWs that you can then dump into Photoshop and do amazing things with. So like for $600, no. For $300, no. For $200, you have my attention. For $110, you have me like trying to remember if they made me an offer to buy it and keep it, or if I actually sent it back, because if I don't have one in the office for $110, I might just buy one. It's worth taking a look at. It's a very, very interesting object.
I've got a couple laying around.
Gave me one.
Yeah. And we actually did the initial video for them, for the product. We made the video for them. And,
I still have mine, but I don't. I feel like the iPhone camera is so good.
Well, so the only
this
thing
is a 1-inch sensor, right?
It's a 1-inch sensor.
Yeah,
it looks way better.
Sony sensor.
It looks way better than the iPhone. Like it's not like a little better. Like when I take pictures of them, I was going through something the other day through my iPhoto. And suddenly the photos got really good, and then they went back to being good, but not. And then I realized, oh, that's because that was a show that I shot some on my DxO and some on my iPhone.
So you shoot video with it?
Well, this was stills, but you can shoot video. It'll shoot 1080p video.
Oh, nice.
And again, it looks good. And what's really nice about it is the swivel. So what you can do is you can swivel it if you want to shoot like a high shot. I have to admit, I wasn't thinking about this, but when Andy started talking about it, I realized, oh, I should pull it out for cooking videos. I'm working on these little cooking videos right now. And it would be really easy to turn it down and get a great image with something that's relatively compact.
This is such an expensive show for me. I swear.
It's really good.
God, I've already bought everything.
Yeah, so you already have this one. Oh, but you
I have this. I don't have the newest one, though. Do I?
No, I think it didn't change. It's the same.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's at $110, it's a steal.
Oh, it's a must-have.
Yeah, it's a must-have. Yeah.
I reiterate that I'm recommending it not as an iPhone camera, although you can certainly do that. The apps, you don't know how long those apps are going to be compatible or updated. Right. You can control the whole thing through that little touch screen in the back.
Oh, so you just use it as a little baby camera.
You totally feel like a spy when you take pictures.
I don't know where it is right now. I took one last look for it during the commercial. But yeah, I found myself carrying it in my pocket just as part of my EDC because, again, it has a sliding like lens cover that's kind of sad. It's almost like an AirPod case.
Oh, so just use
satisfying
it as a camera.
To slip on.
You can't.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I was using it for. Yeah.
It totally feels like.
There'd be times where I'd be like, taking a snapshot with the iPhone and it's nice. Then I realized that, ooh, you know, the colors in those flowers, every once in a while, for some reason, the Boston Parks Department gets it in their ear we have to plant like amazing amounts of tulips and they'll all be stolen in 2 weeks. But for 2 weeks, we'll have tulips. And if I'm there, it's like, oh, you know what? The colors are so good and the sky is so blue. I actually want a real 20 megapixel RAW file of this so that I can tweak it as much as I want in Photoshop. And that was when I would not, it wasn't a situation where I would have brought a camera with me. But since I had this little like pebble sized camera,
Have to worry about the app then to do all those settings.
It even saves in DNG file format.
Nice.
So you can just
be a zoomer and put it on your phone. You can, but all the hip cats are using it by itself.
And a little public service announcement. Please, people, stop stealing Boston's tulips. Okay. That's just not
Before Andy gets there and manages to get his backpack filled.
What kind of lowlife would steal tulips from Boston public parks?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not Dutch reclamation? It's a Dutch reclamationist?
Or a little gopher. Maybe one of those squirrels Andy
can
take
pictures of. Oh, it's one of Andy's squirrels.
Yeah. Alex Lindsay.
Leo, what's it called? Just breaking. To go with our subject today, the Guardian just reported that they think Jeff Bezos's phone was hacked via WhatsApp before all of the recent Saudi Arabian stuff went on.
Yeah, see, there was some thought that it was his girlfriend's estranged brother that did that. But now they think it was a hack, huh?
Yeah, via WhatsApp from the Saudis. Nation state.
Yep. Yeah, there you go.
What has he got against the Saudis? What is he doing with the Saudis?
No, the Saudis are doing the president's bidding. So it's all a
The Washington Post.
It's all it is all transactional. That's how this all works, right? You scratch my back, I scratch yours, right? So and remember, they were using the used the Inquirer, another one of the president's cronies, to publish that. So the whole it's a wonderful circle of friends.
Happiness.
Of scratching each other's backs.
Yep.
The circle of blight.
Loud Lab. What is this?
Okay,
this is
so,
Alex's
so
pick.
For one of the things that when we're doing live streams for clients, we pay a lot of attention to the audio. Audio turns out in most shows to be more than 50% of the show. It is really 80 to 90% of the show. And the quality of your audio is really, really important. People can look through a lot of rough video. But if they get a lot of crackles and all kinds of stuff falling apart on their audio, they'll immediately tune away. So we want to know if it's too loud. We want to know if it's out of phase. We want to know if it's, or, you know, all of these things are things that are important to us. And so, so anyway, so this is a, what we used to use is Spectre, and Spectre went out of, they disappeared. So anyway, so we can't get Spectre anymore. And it was getting a little unstable. This is called Sonic Atom. And Sonic Atom is made by Loud Lab, and they have a couple different apps. This is the one that that I've been playing with the most, and I'm really happy with it. And this, what it does is it gives you a whole series of graphs and ways to analyze your audio. Audio, because you can't see it, you really need a lot of different ways to measure it. So a lot of the things that we use are a spectrograph and spectrogram. These are showing you across the spectrum frequencies, across the entire spectrum. This is, you know, what's happening. The spectrogram shows it in color, so you can kind of see it there. And the spectrograph is kind of a cross-section of that spectrogram in a lot of ways. And so what we see a lot of times in those is if I have a ground loop in my audio and I have a little buzz that you hear a lot of times when you see politics, is you get this little – and we can look up and see a spectrogram, and I can just see a line going across it. And I go, oh, I need to go over and look at that. So a lot of times I'm dealing with – multiple streams. Some of the stuff we've done is up to 20 different rooms being streamed at the same time. I can't listen to all of them. I need to just look at the graph and just see, oh, that's what's happening over there. And so,
you definitely don't want to cross the streams.
Yeah, definitely don't want to cross the streams. So looking at things like, and then the, and I don't know how to say this because I just got good at saying Lijiazhu meter, and they've changed it to Gonio meter.
I've never known how to pronounce that like, word. I've been seeing it since I was a kid.
I think it's Lisa Hoos.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, but I don't know what the new term is.
Anyway, so but that allows...
Because Lisa Hoos curve is a certain kind of curve.
And there's obviously multimeter loudness, a lot of other, you know, you can even do tuners, so you can play things, and it'll just tell you what
finally
note
something
you're
I don't have to buy
oscilloscopes. Anyway, so a lot of this stuff we use all the time. We literally have walls of these, and what's nice about using these, there's hardware that does this, but number one is this is a lot less expensive. Number two is that you can design how it's going to look. So each one of these windows you can scale, you can move it around, you can change the settings in a way that you can't do with the hardware analyzers. And so we really like to use software analyzers, because when it's coming in, especially on an SDI signal, it's going to be the same. It's, you know, it's
Gonio
embedded.
Meter. It's anyway, got to be pronounced goniometer.
That's what I think. Yeah.
And unless it's like, goniometer.
Exactly. So anyway, it's a great, it's a great, especially if you were using Spectre before and you're trying to find a solution that solves it. This solves it. There's a couple things that Spectre had that this doesn't have, but this has other things that Spectre didn't, and I think it's much more stable. It looks nicer. It's we had trouble with stability.
By the way, this is pronounced. You were right, Lisa Hu. He's French, Jules Antoine Lisa Hu. But you could also call it a Bowditch curve, and then it'd be in English.
Yeah, exactly. So
I've always said Lisa Hoos, but it's a Lisa Hu curve.
It's very complicated. It took us a long time to figure it out, and then they changed the name.
It's a closed curve.
Anyway, if you're really looking for, if you're doing something where you really need to analyze it, and you're looking for a Mac solution that does this really well, this is a great affordable solution to do that. There's obviously crazy solutions that let you measure the room atmospheric.
Do we need
like
this,
that,
John? But... Should we buy this too?
No.
Okay. Just joking. That was my guess. Although I have to say. I'm looking at the other things that Loud Lab does, and they do have some other interesting products, including a sound mixer and a very simple audio editor.
I'm really interested in it. I haven't gotten to play with these yet. Yeah. The audio editor, Flectus, and their sound mixer is something I'm super interested in. I just haven't looked at it enough to recommend it yet, but stay tuned. There may be recommendations in the future that are related to those.
Looks like it's such a clean, easy editor. It would be perfect for doing the kind of editing I do, which is voice editing.
Right.
You know? That's, you know, Mac and Windows on this one. Let me see how much it is, just out of curiosity.
It feels very, like, so far that what I feel like these are...
Oh, it's $40.
They're really affordable.
Yeah.
And it's a very modern interface, so you just really feel like it's responsive, it's doing what it needs to do, and you know, it doesn't feel like you're dealing with a lot of old code.
Who is this Loud Lab? Who are these people?
I don't know, but I'm going to bet that they're
like
some serious audio geeks.
Where did they come from?
Yeah, so...
All their names of their stuff are kind of like Fluctus. But that's an interesting name. It's not quite Lisahu. By the way, here is a Lisahu curve on an oscilloscope that was later adapted to be the logo of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. So our friends down under are familiar with the Lisahu curve.
Isn't that what Tony Stark was using?
Yes, probably.
Can't tell.
A Lisahu suit. Friends, we've come to the end of this show. What a fun show. I thought we had a great conversation. Always is, but this was particularly enjoyable.
Yeah.
Thanks to our panel, not me. I just am here to keep the seat warm. Mr. Rene Ritchie is at imore.com, and he is going to do a vector. He said he promised he'll do a vector explaining all of this encryption, complicated, turn your messages in the cloud off to get security, kind of a weird world we live in.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. imore.com/vector for the vector shows. Are you using a Jib One now?
I ordered one, but all the videos were up by the time I ordered, so it's going to be several weeks before it gets here.
So cool. Okay, we're going to have dueling Jib shots.
Oh, that'd be so great. Especially when I get the Alex mixer, and then I can actually switch them in as the show starts.
Yes.
Dun, 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 dun.
Then you need a big 3D logo, a trumpet section.
You know what you can. What I bet you can do with the API inside of Blackmagic is you can set it up so that when you cut to that shot,
it does it automatically.
It cues the jib.
Yeah.
We could do that with a TriCaster. I bet you could do it with the ATI.
Yep. Oh, I know you can.
Yeah. That's Alex Lindsay. He gives us lots of expensive ideas. At Alex Lindsay on the Twitter, AlexLindsay.
My kids are now on TikTok.
You've been pushing TikTok like crazy.
I'm just telling you.
Do you want to share their account with us?
Sure. It's called the McDubbies. It's their idea.
The McDubbies?
Yeah. If you go to Twitter, they're pretty funny, actually.
McDubbies?
No, it's Y-S.
Y-S.
There was a big discussion about I-E-S and Y-S, but we decided if it was a name.
Well, you know what? I should just go to...
If you go to Twitter,
twitter.com/AlexLindsay.
It's like the last thing I tweeted, I think. So it'll be easy to find.
That's easy.
That's easier
to find.
He's
now flogging his kids' TikTok account.
You know, I just want them to be...
He's on it.
It's blunt that I just want them to have some followers. I want them to be encouraged.
Let's everybody follow the McDubbies.
Everybody, there they are. It's right there. Right there. Just click on that.
The McDubbies. Oh, it's the McDubbies.
Yeah, the McDubbies.
You forgot the.
And they're
going to have the best special effects.
Get the sound up. I got to hear what she's saying.
Oh, well, this is they're doing lip sync.
Yeah, but we can't play
that's
the music because we'll get it taken.
No,
down.
I don't think so. This is
you
all stuff
you.
That's part of the.
I'm me. You're two.
Yeah, but try it here. Wait, go to.
Go ahead, turn it up.
You can play this. This stuff?
Nope. They're saying we'll be taken
TikTok
down.
TikTok stuff?
You can screw you, YouTube. Just screw you. YouTube.
If you play that second one, it's definitely not copywritten.
All right.
It's not a music. It's
play
not music.
The sound.
Could it be possibly my like 15 missing cookies that just vanished out of nowhere?
I didn't eat them.
Yeah, well, where are they, Parker?
So anyway,
that is hysterical. Excellent job on the lip syncing.
Yeah, they're There, it's become, you know.
Wait a minute. Is Daddy behind the camera?
Yeah, I'm the camera operator.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. You need to get one of those Jib ones.
I know.
For the TikTok operation.
And put them on a green screen, Alex.
Yeah, green screen.
It's coming.
I bet it is. This is going to be the best produced TikTok channel ever.
It's going to be ILM quality TikTok.
It gets a little absurd because, you know, there's production meetings. There's a database.
Oh my god!
I built a database in FileMaker that keeps track of all the TikToks and the sounds and the notes and the storyboards and then we meet and we talk about which ones are getting done.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are there animatics?
Yeah, there's not animatics, but that's going too far. But they're storyboards. They're storyboards.
All the other things are not.
Some of them may require it.
If you're on TikTok, the McDubbies, TheMcDubbys. That's a very TikTok name. In TikTok, you wouldn't do IES.
It took a lot of work to get that name. Registering in TikTok turned out to be kind of...
It's not them C-dubs either. It's the McDubbies, not them C-dubs.
I have no idea what it means. They came up with it. Like, they were like, what do you want to change? Call your channel and do it.
You're smart. You should let them... They're internet natives. You should let them live as an internet native.
Well, and here's the thing is I don't know. I mean, we're on a different... What we watch TikTok on is a different phone. We watch them together. There's not like... I feel like, I don't know how much risk there really is.
Oh, who cares if the Chinese know about new math?
Exactly.
And, I don't care.
And the funniest thing is it's such a great way to teach them media production because we're doing everything, but it only lasts for 10 seconds. And so you sit there and you can plan all this stuff out, and they get like a mini version where you're done with it and you hand it back and people watch it. And, it's fun.
Only 18 followers as we speak. The McDubbies
just went up yesterday.
Be a million followers.
Well, that's our goal.
Everybody get out there and follow him. Andy Iannacco, follow him all the way to Boston Public Radio, WGBH. Lord. It's suddenly, it's the solarized Andy Iannacco.
This is a strange game, this video one-upmanship. The only way to win is not to play.
Shall we play a game? When will you be on GBH?
No, I was going to smudge up the lens too, so it's not in focus. I was actually on yesterday, so you can go to wgbhnews.org to hear what I have to say about the FBI versus Apple and a couple other holiday flavors. I think my next up, I'm back to Fridays next Friday. I think that'll be at the Boston Public Library at 11:30 in the morning. I think as usual, you can watch it live or later. It's streamed on wgbhnews.org, and if you go to my Twitter feed. At Iannacco, I usually tweet out like when I know the exact times. Usually Fridays at around 11:20, but we tend to as presidents keep getting impeached and stuff, the schedules kind of change.
We'll send you a jar of Vaseline for the next episode.
Please give me the Barbara Streisand model
yes, it's in the budget, I believe. Lori Gill needs no Vaseline. She's fabulous, managing editor at imore.com. Now with her new wood paneling.
We're all stepping up our game now.
Stepping up the game. Man, I'm going to have to get to work here. Get that jib. Thank you, Lori. Anything you want to plug? Everybody else plug stuff. You got your new TikTok channel up?
Nope. I have not signed up for TikTok because I can look at TikTok without signing up for it. So that's how I'm going to stay.
Lori made an awesome article on how to export your Apple Card transactions.
New feature. You can finally. Yeah. It's been driving Lisa crazy. She says, where's my statement? I said, well, here's your statement. She says, well, how do I put this in the QuickBooks?
Lori's got you covered.
I said, you can't until now. This is a new feature of the Apple Card. Thank you, Lori. We'll all look that up. Thank you all for being here. We do this show every Tuesday right after iOS Today. You can make Tuesday your Apple Day, starting with iOS Today around 9:30 Pacific and then Mac Break Weekly around 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern. That's 1800 UTC. Tune in and watch the show. You could participate in the background if you're watching live. The live stream, audio or video, is at twit.tv/live. And the chat room that goes on is at irc.twit.tv. For those of you who listen on your own time, you can get copies of the show at twit.tv/mbw. We're also on YouTube, at least until they take this episode down. You can also...
hey, Jude, don't make
stop
it bad.
Stop it!
Sorry.
Stop it!
I'm a troublemaker.
That'd be interesting to see if Content ID fingers that or not. That's going to be interesting. You can subscribe in your favorite podcast application. Just look for Mac Break Weekly. And if you are listening, you know, after the fact, we do have interactivity for you, too. As I mentioned, twit.community, our forums, and our new Mastodon instance, twit.social, are all wide open, and we love having you in there. I hang out there, and we get our hosts to do that as well, if possible. Again, thank you for participating. And I'm sorry to say it's time to get back to work, though, because it's break time. How many years have I been doing this wrong? You made it up. Time to get back to work.
Break time is over.
Thank you, Alex. Let's see you next time.